Hey, Smutters.
Hey, everybody. So, guess what?
What?
It is getting cold out.
Oh, my gosh.
I had to use my heater this morning.
I wore a jacket today and used my heater, and I'm so excited.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah. Is it going to get hot again, though?
I don't think so, but I can't be 100% on that.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, yes, I'm super excited. So,
how's your week been?
It hasn't been bad. Not bad. It's gone by kind of fast, actually. I'm so excited to sleep in tomorrow.
Oh, Lord, me too. Like, I finally have help at work now. So, I'm not working 70 hours a week. So, that's a plus.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, my stomach's hurting from that chili.
Oh yes, homemade chili tonight.
Yeah, we made homemade chili, you guys.
You cannot go wrong with homemade chili.
I ate way too much, and my stomach is just so full. So, anyway, Troy and I were talking about Halloween costumes.
And we just watched an awesome movie.
We did just watch an awesome movie. We watched Strays. The one about the dogs when they can, I guess, talk or whatever. It's got Will Ferrell in it. And I can't watch dog movies. I cannot, because in every dog movie, something happens where I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah, so she had to look it up to make sure that none of the dogs got killed.
I know. I was like, if any of the dogs die, we're turning it off right now. None of them do, but still, y'all remember Brantley, one of our little co-hosts, our puppy. He looked just like Brantley.
Baby.
Yeah, he looked just like Brantley, so it was kind of hard to watch, but it was a really good movie. So, if y'all are thinking about that movie.
Yeah, adults only.
Yeah. I mean, unless you just want your kids to see it, but it's kind of dirty.
It's rated R, and it's about dogs, so use your own judgment.
Yeah. And then we watched The Boogeyman.
It was okay.
I didn't like it. I just thought it was stupid. I don't know. I just don't picture the boogeyman that way. And he looks like an alien. So I was just like,
I guess the boogeyman really manifests into whatever scares you the most.
That one didn't. That one was the same
Maybe
for everybody.
That person, though.
But it was the same for the other people that they'd never met, too.
Well.
So I just did not like it.
Well, quit blowing my theories out the window.
It was a stupid theory.
God, my back's hurting.
All right. Like I was saying, we've been talking a lot about Halloween costumes. We are thinking about recording in our Halloween costumes on Halloween.
You posted the one I sent you, right?
No, I haven't posted that one yet. Troy?
The vampire one?
Wait, I put it on our story. Troy had sent me, I didn't say anything about it being your Halloween costume. I just posted it. But because I was going to do a poll asking if they thought that this should be your costume for Halloween.
It would be a tad bit nipply out.
Y'all, he found this costume, if you haven't seen it on Instagram. It was like a wrestling onesie, kind of, with his nipples hanging out. A little cape and a collar.
Totally cute.
And some fangs. He is going to be the cutest vampire you've ever seen. And
better than Twilight. I just needed a sparkle.
Just a sparkle. I can throw some glitter on you. But yeah, we're thinking of Halloween costumes for our first, what's it called?
Being live, or not live, but like showing our faces type stuff.
Yeah, because we were wanting to do it on the YouTube.
Because I'm gorgeous.
You're beautiful. I was wanting to do it on the YouTube channel. And
I'm
if you guys.
I'm posting pictures of you tonight with our dog Regans.
No, you're not. So if you guys aren't following the YouTube channel, follow us. Y'all know to go to
Please
Supernatural
subscribe.
Smut. And
make sure you like and follow.
Yeah, for sure. We're super excited about it. We've got to start posting more content to it, more videos.
You follow it or subscribe to it. We're not going to send you random shit. It just gets us recognized more, so please hit the follow button.
Yes, and the more followers we get, the more videos we'll put up of us doing random shit. So,
which is always fun.
Which is super fun. But anyway,
I'm going to wrestle her one night. WWE up in this mug.
That's awesome. Okay, so the story tonight, I don't know how long it'll be. It can go either way.
We haven't talked about current events yet.
Well, what are our current events?
I don't know. What's happened this week?
I literally asked you before we started recording what you were going to talk about your events. Hmm. And you said, I don't have any.
If you guys have never seen Dylan and Shelby, the real country people on Facebook and their little stories or whatever, she pulled a good trick on him today. It was funny. Like, he loves just regular taste of mustard. And so, like, she convinced him that a mustard company wanted to sponsor them. So she had this jar of mustard out, and she tricked him to where, like, he would taste it and be like, this is so blah, blah, blah. It was hilarious. You have to watch it. Yeah. I know you don't like them, but they live close to us.
I saw you sent it to me. they're great, you know. They're doing something right, you know it, and they look like the nicest people you've ever met. So,
and he's really funny.
Yeah, he's super funny. but I liked when they were getting excited about the baby coming and everything. They're a cute couple. So, what are their names?
Shelby and Dylan.
So, yes, y'all, look at Shelby and Dylan. They are pretty much our neighbors, aren't they?
Yeah.
I wonder if we sound like them.
Probably.
To other people.
I'm sure we do.
Because I hear them and I'm like, God, they are really country. And they are literally probably like 30 minutes away from us.
Yeah.
So, I bet like if we all got together, it would sound so normal to us. You know what? Yeah. We're going to make new friends. But yeah, give them a looking at. They're pretty cute. I'm still obsessed with Selena Spooky Boo. I know she's been sick, so I will meet her one day. She's like my absolute favorite. So, yes. Anyway, so enough of us rambling, I guess. What are you texting me?
Maybe.
But yes, tonight's episode is about, it's not really paranormal, it's just weird, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about the Watcher House, and Netflix had a movie on it not too long ago. I was not crazy about the movie. I didn't think it was very accurate. So I quit watching it. I didn't watch all of it. I just did not think it was very good, but the story in itself is fantastic. Like, I love the story. It's very,
I'm fantastic.
You are fantastic. It's very scary, and it would, like, I don't know what I would do if this happened to us, you know?
I don't know, but I do need to make a comment about something real quick.
What?
I really want to go to a haunted house this year.
If we go to one, because remember, I was looking up,
I want to go to that one where we used to live somewhat close to. It's like on the hill.
Haunted Hilltop?
Yeah, that's it. I want to go to that one. Everybody seems to like really like that one.
I want to go to the Hillsbar Marina. That's a real like haunted spot. And they actually are offering, like, you can do ghost hunts there. And I would like to do that. Like, they have a full package where you can do, like, their haunted house and then do...
That's really cool. I really want to go to the Haunted Hilltop.
Oh, cool. Awesome. We may do that.
Cool.
Okay. But, yes. This story... Yes.
Yes, what?
Huh? It pulled up.
That's what she said.
Okay, so as I said, this family, it's about a family. They bought their dream home, and they start getting creepy letters, and the letters were very...
Are they from back in the future or past?
No. The letters were very, like, accurate about what they were saying, And it was weird because they could not catch who was doing this to them. he started talking about their children and stuff like that. And they couldn't do anything. Like, they called the police, and the police, there was nothing the police could do. It was just somebody sending them letters, you know? It wasn't necessarily... Nothing
threatening?
It was kind of threatening.
Well, the police could have done something.
There was no name or address on the letters. They, you know, it was going through the mail, so there wasn't anybody they could arrest. You know what I mean? And no. To this day, what do you mean no? They couldn't...
You need, when you mail a letter, you need to have postage, a return address... a name. I mean, you can do it without a name, but when you put it through the mail, it stamps it what city it came from.
Oh yeah, what city? I mean, the person literally said they were like watching their house. So, but we're going to dive into the story.
Dive on in.
Dive on in. Let's see.
So what exactly is it about, though? Is it a ghost or a
poltergeist? No, it's not really paranormal at all. It's just a weird story. I've always been interested in this story because to this day, they've never caught who did it.
Was there a murder?
No.
Oh.
That's the thing. It's just a lot of threatening letters, but weirdly accurate letters, like... about their children's blood in the house and stuff. Like, really weird. Yeah. And this case has always just... I've always wanted to know who it is. And once you think you know who it is...
It's not.
It's not. It's somebody... Like, you'll think it's somebody totally different. So, because they went through a bunch of suspects, but they never had enough evidence to put it on anyone. So, we're going to get into this, and I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I do.
Are we diving on in?
We're going to dive on in. One night in June of 2014, Derek Brodus had just finished an evening of painting at his new home in Westfield, New Jersey, when he went outside to check the mail. Derek and his wife, Maria, had closed on the six-bedroom house at 657. Damn. I know, right? 657 Boulevard 3 days earlier, and were doing some renovations before they moved in. So there wasn't much in the mail except a few bills and a white card-shaped envelope.
Boom, boom, boom.
It was addressed in thick, clunky handwriting to the new owner. And there was a typed note inside, and it began pretty nice. It started... Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. Now, for the Brodus's, buying 657 Boulevard had fulfilled a dream. Maria was raised in Westfield, and the house was a few blocks from her childhood home. Derek grew up working class in Maine and then moved his way up the ladder at an insurance company in Manhattan to become a senior vice president with a salary large enough to afford
the six-bedroom house.
The $1.3 million house.
Yeah.
And this is in 2014, too. The Brodus's had bought 657 Boulevard just after Derek celebrated his 40th birthday, and their three kids were already debating which of the house's fireplaces Santa Claus would use. So that kind of gives you an idea on how young the kids are.
Yeah.
As Derek kept reading the letter from his new neighbor, it started to take a turn. How did you end up here? The writer asked. Did 657 Boulevard call to you with its force within? The letter went on. 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out.
That's why I don't open the mail.
Yeah, we just throw it away. the author, the letter identified the Brodus's exactly Honda minivan, as well as the workers renovating the home. I see already that you have flooded 657 Boulevard with contractors so that you can destroy the house as it was supposed to be, the person wrote. Tisk, tisk, tisk. Bad move. You don't want to make 657 Boulevard unhappy. Earlier in the week, Derek and Maria had gone to the house and chatted with their new neighbors while their children, who were 5, 8, and 10 years old, ran around the backyard with several kids from the neighborhood. The letter writer seemed to have noticed. You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are 3, and I have counted. The anonymous correspondent wrote before asking if there were more on the way. Do you need to fill the house with this young blood I requested? It's better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family, or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them to me. The envelope had no return address. Who am I? The person wrote. There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive past 657 Boulevard each day. Do you think they live in 657 Boulevard? Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look out at many of the window, or look out any of many windows in 657 Boulevard at all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I am one. The letter concluded with a suggestion that this message would not be the last. Welcome, my friends. Welcome. Let the party begin. Followed by a signature typed in a cursive font, The Watcher. That gave me chills. Are you serious? Let the party begin. It sounds like it already started when he started on their children. You know it?
Yeah.
That's so scary.
Spooky boo.
Spooky boo. It was after 10 p.m. and Derek Brodus was alone. He raced around the house, turning off all the lights so no one could see inside. He then called the Westfield Police Department. An officer came to the house, read the letter, and said, quote, "What the fuck is this?"
Wow.
He asked Derek if he had enemies. I've never heard a police officer say stuff like that when you're, like, talking to him about things that have happened, you know? I've never heard a police officer come out and be like, "What the fuck," you know?
I have on cops and stuff like that.
You're so sweaty.
I've been watching Cops.
You've been watching Cops? He asked Derek if he had enemies and recommended moving a piece of construction equipment from the back porch in case the watcher tried to throw it through one of the windows, which that's a smart idea.
Yeah.
Derek rushed back to his wife and kids who were living at their other home elsewhere in Westfield. Now, I know that sounds kind of like a dick move on the police officer's part, but keep in mind, he has nothing to go off of, and he's only trying to be helpful by just kind of looking around and maybe you should move this so it doesn't make it easier for this person to try to come in and hurt you. I mean, because there's really nothing he can do at this point. That night, Derek and Maria wrote an email to John and Andrea Woods. That was the couple who sold them 657 Boulevard, to ask if they had any idea who the watcher might be or why he or she had written. I asked the Woods to bring me young blood, and it looks like they listened. Andrea Woods replied the next morning. A few days before moving out, the Woods had received a letter from the watcher. The note was odd, she said, and made similar mention of the watcher's family observing the house over time. But Andrea said she and her husband never received anything like it in their 23 years in the house, and had thrown the letter away without much thought. That day, the Woods went with Maria to the police station, where Detective Leonard Lugo told her not to tell anyone about the letters, including her new neighbors, most of whom she had never met, and all of whom were now suspects. So, this is kind of interesting.
It had to be a neighbor.
I don't know. I listened to when I research, I listen to a bunch of podcasts about this story. I look everything up. And one of them brought up an interesting point, and I was kind of thinking it too. The watcher said, you know, my grandfather watched the house, my dad watched the house, and now it is my turn to watch the house. And then the previous owners had gotten a note.
Was the house haunted?
No.
Murders happened?
No. Huh. The previous owners had gotten one letter, and it was when they were moving out, and it wasn't threatening. They just thought it was weird. So I kind of feel like the new watcher is going a little overboard. And Daddy Watcher is like, he totally misunderstood what I was telling him to do, you know? Like, this new watcher is like, you know, balls deep. I'm going all in this, you know? I'm going to let him know I'm here. Whereas Daddy and Grandfather Watcher were just watching the house and making sure things were good, you know?
Right.
Maybe this one misunderstood the project. You know what I'm saying? The Brodesses spent the coming weeks on high alert. Derek canceled a work trip, and whenever Maria took the kids to their new house, she would yell their names if they wandered into a corner of the yard. When Derek gave a tour of the renovation to a couple on the block, he froze when the wife said, "It'll be nice to have some young blood in the neighborhood." That was one of the neighbors that came over that said that. Did you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
The Brodesses' general contractor arrived one morning to find that a heavy sign he'd hammered in the front yard had been ripped out overnight. 2 weeks after the letter arrived, Maria stopped by the house to look at some paint samples and check the mail. She recognized the thick black lettering on a card-shaped envelope and called the police. "Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard," the watcher wrote. "The workers have been busy, and I have been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what's in the walls yet? In time, they will." This time, the watcher had addressed Derek and Maria directly, misspelling their names as Mr. and Mrs. Braddis, B-R-A. Had the watcher been close enough to hear one of the Brodesses' contractors addressing them? The watcher boasted of having learned a lot about the family in the preceding weeks, especially about their children. The letter identified the Brodesses' three kids by birth, order, and their nicknames, the ones Maria had been yelling. "I'm pleased to know your names now in the name of the young blood you have brought to me," it said. "You certainly say their names often." The letter asked about one child in particular, whom the writer had seen using an easel inside an enclosed porch. "Is she the artist of the family?" The letter continued, "657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement? Or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. Mm-hmm. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream. Will they sleep in the attic? Or will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedrooms facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better. All the windows and doors in 657 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house. Who am I? I am the watcher, and I've been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better part of 2 decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you. It was their time to move on and kindly sold it when I asked them to. I pass by many times a day. 657 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. And now you are too, Brodus family. Welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what brought the past 3 families to 657 Boulevard, and now it has brought you to me. Have a happy moving in day. You know I'll be watching." That is some creepy ass shit.
Oh, yeah. I'd definitely be moving.
Right? But they had put all their life savings into this house. You know, it was finally their dream home. And I've got pictures of the house I'll post, y'all. It's a gorgeous house. Derek and Maria stopped bringing the kids to the house. They were no longer sure when or if they would move in. And several weeks later, a third letter arrived. "Where have you gone to?" the watcher wrote. 657 Boulevard is missing you. Many Westfield residents compare their town to Mayberry, the idyllic setting for the Andy Griffith Show, the kind of place where a new neighbor might greet you with a welcoming note. Westfield is 45 minutes from New York and a bit too slow for singles, meaning the town's 30,000 residents are largely well-to-do families. This year, Bloomberg ranked Westfield the 99th richest city in America, but only the 18th wealthiest in New Jersey. And in 2014, when the watcher struck, the website Neighborhood Scout named it the country's 30th safest town. What the hell? What is that? It's the cat?
Hairless kitty.
Oh. Looks like a little turd, doesn't it?
Looks evil. Cute, though, in some ways.
Weirdly. The most pressing local issues of late, according to residents, have been the temporary closure of Trader Joe's after a roof collapse and the rampant scourge of unconstitutional policing, by which they mean aggressive parking enforcement. So the only like drama going on in this town is Trader Joe's roof collapsing, and then them getting mad at the officers for being aggressive at illegal parking. So that's all that had happened in that town. Also, Westfield is 86% white. So, you know, the prominent, you know, it's mainly white people there.
I bet they're doing stupid shit.
Fucking white people, I swear.
They're the ones that do the stupid shit.
Hate white people so much. One activity all locals recognize as treacherous is trying to buy a house. There's a lot of money and a lot of ego, one resident who requested anonymity before discussing Westfield real estate told me. I've seen bidding wars where friends lost by $300,000. The Brodus' house was on the boulevard, a wide, tree-lined street with some of the more desirable homes in town. As the watcher had noted, the boulevard used to be the street to live on. You made it if you lived on the boulevard. Built in 1905, 657 Boulevard was perhaps the grandest home on the block. And when the Woods' put it up on the market, they had received multiple offers above their asking price. That led the Brodus' to initially suspect that the watcher might be someone that was upset over losing out on the house. But the Woods' said one interested buyer had backed out after a bad medical diagnosis, while another had already found another home. So it couldn't have been somebody that just wanted the house. Right. And an email to the Brodus' Andrea Woods proposed another theory. Would the mention of the contractor trucks and your children suggest that it was someone in the neighborhood? Really? Obviously, Andrea. God, that's like the first thing we went to. Thanks, Andrea. The letters did indicate proximity. They have been processed in Kearney, the U.S. Postal Service's distribution center in northern New Jersey. The first was postmarked June 4th before the sale was public. The Woods' had never put up a for sale sign, and only a day after the contractors arrived. The renovations were mostly interior, and people who live nearby say they didn't notice an unusual commotion, even from the jackhammering in the basement. When Derek and Maria walked Detective Lugo around the house, they showed him that the easel on the porch was hidden from the street by vegetation, making it difficult to see unless someone was behind the house or right next door. Now, if you don't remember, the reason why they showed him that was because the watcher mentioned the easel and wanted to know which child was the artist. Remember, because it wanted to know who was going to be painting in that room.
Yeah.
So that's why they're talking about it was kind of difficult to see. A few days after the first letter, Maria and Derek went to a barbecue across the street, welcoming them and another new homeowner to the block. The Brodesses hadn't told anyone about the watcher, as the police had instructed, and found themselves scanning the party for clues while keeping tabs on their children. They ran through a crowd, just playing around, that made up much of the suspect pool. "We kept screaming at them to stay close," Maria said. "People must have thought we were crazy." I bet they got talked about, because...
Oh, I'm sure.
You know it.
Yeah, they were talk of the town.
At one point, Derek was chatting with John Schmidt, who lived two doors down, when Schmidt told him about the Langfords, who lived between them. Peggy Langford was in her 90s, and several of her adult children, all in their 60s, lived with her. "The family was a bit odd," Schmidt said, "but harmless."
I thought you said this didn't. This wasn't about a curse or anything.
It's not. What are you talking
Obviously
about?
Obviously it is.
Why?
Having adult children live with you? That's the worst curse ever.
I was like, what are you talking about?
That's the worst curse ever.
Our kids know. I'm like, 18, you are out.
Bye.
No, that I'm kidding, y'all. That's not true. I tease them about it. They're not jokes. Just kidding.
Anyway,
no, I don't want to get myself in trouble. So all her kids were living with her. The family was a bit odd, but harmless. He described one of the younger Langfords, Michael, who didn't work and had a beard like Ernest Hemingway, as kind of a Boo Radley character. If y'all don't know who Boo Radley is, it's a reference from To Kill a Mockingbird, and he was kind of the oddball in the town. Derek thought the case was solved. The Langford house was right next to the easel on the porch. The family had lived there since the 60s when the watcher's father, the letter said, had begun observing 657 Boulevard. Richard Langford, the family patriarch, had died 12 years earlier, and the current watcher claimed to have been on the job for the better part of two decades.
Yeah.
When the Brodesses told Lugo about the family, he said he already knew, and a week after the first letter arrived, he brought Michael Langford to the police headquarters for an interview. Michael denied knowing anything about the letters, but the Brodesses say that Lugo told them that the narrative of what he said matched things mentioned in the letters. This isn't CSI Westfield, Lugo later told the Brodesses. When the wife is dead, it's the husband.
Wow.
Okay. But there wasn't much hard evidence, and after a few weeks, the police chief told the Brodesses that, short of an admission, there wasn't much the department could do. "This is someone who threatened my kids, and the police are saying probably nothing's going to happen," Derek said. "Probably isn't good enough for me." After the second letter, Derek told the cops that if they didn't take care of the situation, they would have a different kind of case on their hands. "This person attacked my family and where I'm from. If you do that, you get your ass beat," Derek
yeah, you
told
don't
me.
Mess with families.
Family. That makes me think of Fast and Furious. Family. Frustrated. That took a weird turn, didn't it?
Yep.
Okay, we'll just mark out that last part. You're so funny. Frustrated, the Brodesses began their own investigation. Derek became obsessed. He set up webcams in 657 Boulevard and spent nights crouched in the dark, watching to see if anyone was watching the house at close range. Maria thought I was crazy.
I would have that damn thing booby-trapped.
Oh, yeah. That would...
Like, night vision, like, trip wires. I mean, you name it.
Sorry.
You thirsty?
I was so thirsty. Sorry. Had to get a big gulp of my monster real quick.
That's what she said.
That's weird.
Not weird at all.
Okay. Back to the story. Maria thought I was crazy. He told me recently at a coffee shop in Manhattan, where he covered a table with documents relating to the case, including copies of the letters, which he and his wife had shared with only a few friends and family members. He showed me a map displaying when each of 657's neighbors had moved in.
And how did he get the map, the letters?
Huh?
If it had only been shared with a few friends and family, then how do you have copies of the letters?
No, he's saying that Derek met him and showed the letters.
Oh.
Yeah. where was I? The Langfords were the only ones there since the 60s, with overlays marking possible sight lines for the easel in a circle for approximate range of earshot to estimate who might have heard Maria yelling their kids' names. Only a few homes fit both criteria. He was working on this. Like, this took up his life. Yeah. The Brodesses also turned to several experts. They employed a private investigator who staked out the neighborhood and ran background checks on the Langfords, but didn't find anything noteworthy. Derek reached out to a former FBI agent who served as an inspiration for Clarice Starling in The Silence of the Lambs. They're on a high school board of trustees together, and they also hired Robert Linehan, another former FBI agent, to conduct a threat assessment. Linehan recognized several old-fashioned ticks in the letters that pointed to an older writer. The envelope was addressed to M/M Bratis. The salutations included the day's weather, warm and humid, sunny and cool for a summer day. And the sentences had double spaces between them. The letters had a certain literary...
Which means it was an older person doing it on a typewriter.
Yeah.
Because us older folks, we no longer have to double space. Because we do it on computers. Typewriters, we had to do space.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that. Typewriters are neat.
Wow. Okay, Captain Random.
You were just You were just talking about typewriters.
Squirrel.
I like the noises they make when you hit their keys. They're so cool.
I like the noises you make when I hit you.
Stop! You're going to get us canceled. Oh my God.
I didn't mean it yet that way.
Oh. The letters. Stop. Okay, the letters had a certain literary. Is it Panache? Panache? What is this word?
I don't know.
It's either one of those, which suggested a voracious reader and a surprising lack of profanity given the level of anger, which Linehan thought meant a less macho writer. Maybe, he wondered, the Watcher had seen The Watcher starring Keanu Reeves as a serial killer who stalks a detective trying to catch him. Linehan didn't think The Watcher was likely to act on the threats, but the letters had enough typos and errors to imply a certain eroticism. The first letter was dated Tuesday, June 4th, but that day was a Wednesday. There was also a seething anger directed at the wealthy in particular. The Watcher was upset by new money moving into town. That date thing, I never know what day it is. So, I think you could overlook that, right?
Possibly.
Maybe. Unless they did it on purpose.
Yeah.
So, maybe they shouldn't overlook it. Yeah. Okay. Are you the one, those Hoboken transplants who are ruining Westfield? And by the Brodesses' relatively modest renovations, the house is crying from all the pain it is going through. You have changed it and made it so fancy. You are stealing its history, its cries for the past, and what used to be in the time when I roamed its halls. The 1960s were a good time for 657 Boulevard when I ran from room to room, imagining the life with the rich occupants there. The house was full of life and young blood, and then it got old, and so did my father. But he kept watching until the day he died, and now I watch and wait for the day when the young blood will be mine. Linehan recommended looking into former housekeepers or their descendants, Perhaps the watcher was jealous that the Brodesses had bought a home that the writer could not afford. But the focus remained on the Langfords. In cooperation with the Westfield police, the Brodesses sent a letter to the Langfords announcing plans to tear down the house, hoping to prompt a response. Nothing happened. The Langfords didn't care. Detective Lugo brought Michael Langford in for a second interview, but got nowhere. And his sister, Abby, accused the police of harassing their family. Eventually, the Brodesses hired Lee Levitt, a lawyer who met with several members of the Langford family, as well as their attorney, who showed them the letters, along with photos explaining how their home was one of the few vantage points from which the easel could be seen. The meetings grew tense, Levitt told me, and the Langfords insisted Michael was innocent. One night, Derek had a dream in which he confronted Peggy, the eldest Langford, and demanded she build an 8-foot fence between the properties. Maria was having other kinds of dreams. One night, she woke up to an especially vivid one about a man who lived nearby. He was wearing these boots and carrying a pitchfork and calling to the kids. I couldn't get to him in time, Maria said. She thought almost anyone could be the watcher, which made daily life feel like navigating a labyrinth of threats. She probed the faces of shoppers at Trader Joe's to see if they looked strangely at her kids and spent hours Googling anyone who seemed suspicious. There were reasons to consider other suspects. For one thing, the police spoke to Michael before the second letter was sent, which would make sending two more especially reckless. The Brodesses say that Lugo told them they wouldn't receive any more letters after he spoke to Michael. Then, there was the rest of the neighborhood to consider. The private investigator found two child sex offenders within a few blocks. Oh my goodness. Bill Woodward, the Brodesses' house painter, had also noticed something strange. The couple behind 657 Boulevard kept a pair of lawn chairs strangely close to the Brodesses' property. One day I was looking out the window and I saw this older guy sitting in one of the chairs, Woodward told me. He wasn't facing his house, he was facing the Brodesses. But by the end of 2014, the investigation had stalled. The watcher had left no digital trail and no fingerprints and no way to place someone at the scene of a crime that could have been hatched from pretty much any mailbox in northern New Jersey. The letters could be read closely for possible clues or dismissed as the nonsensical ramblings of a sociopath. It was like trying to find a needle in a haystack, said Scott Krause, who helped investigate the case for the Union County Prosecutor's Office. In December, the Westfield police took the Brodesses they had, or told the Brodesses they ran out of options. Derek showed the letters to his priest, who agreed to bless the house. The renovations to 657 Boulevard, including a new alarm system, were finished within a few months, but the idea of moving in filled the Brodesses with anxiety. Could they let their kids play outside or have friends over? Would they get a new letter every week? Derek priced out trained German shepherds and posted a job on a website for military veterans. All you have to do is work out in the backyard every day. But the Brodesses hadn't bought 657 to feel bunkered in a fortress. At the end of the day, it would come down to what are you willing to risk, Maria told me. We weren't going to put our kids in harm's way. Derek had been responding to occasional alarms at the house, sometimes in the middle of the night, bringing a knife with him just in case. They were so joyous about their new home, and then within days, they were petrified, Bill Woodward, the painter, said. I'm a stranger, and Maria was crying and shaking in my arms, and it didn't help that the watcher seemed to be getting more and more unhinged. Here's another letter. 657 Boulevard is turning on me. It is coming after me. I don't understand why. What spell did you cast on it? It used to be my friend, and now it is my enemy. I am in charge of 657 Boulevard. It is not in charge of me. I will fend off its bad things and wait for it to become good again. It will not punish me. I will rise again. I will be patient and wait for this to pass, and for you to bring the young blood back to me. 657 Boulevard needs young blood. It needs you. Come back. Let the young blood play again like I once did. Let the young blood sleep in 657 Boulevard. Stop changing it and let it alone. But you know how, like, old people always, like, sometimes they'll talk about kids and they're like, the little young bloods, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, what if he was being nice and he was like, look at all the young blood in the house, you know? I mean, you can take, I mean, I don't think he was being nice. I'm just trying to look at all views to this. But, like, I mean, maybe in that letter he's like, why is it so empty? Why don't, you know, let the young blood have a good time in the house, you know, as I did. What if he's saying it like that? Again, it's none of his business. But, yeah. You know, stay away. But it just, it does sound like an older person, right?
Yeah.
The Brodesses had sold their old home, so they moved in with Maria's parents while continuing to pay the mortgage and property taxes on 657 Boulevard. I had to do things like shovel the driveway, Derek said. Just picture that little indignity. I'd go at 5 in the morning and then come back and do it again at my in-laws. They told only a handful of friends about the letters, which left others to ask why they weren't moving in. Legal issues is what they told people, and wondering if they were getting a divorce. They fought constantly and started taking medication to fall asleep. I was a depressed wreck, Derek said. Maria decided to see a therapist after a routine doctor's visit that began with the question, how are you, that caused her to burst into tears. The therapist said that she was suffering post-traumatic stress that wouldn't go away until she got rid of the house. 6 months after the letters arrived, the Brodesses decided to sell 657 Boulevard. They initially listed it for more than they paid to reflect the renovations they'd done. But few worlds are more gossipy than suburban worlds or than suburban New Jersey real estate, and rumors had already begun to swirl about why the house sat empty. One broker emailed to say her client loved it, but that there are so many unsubstantial rumors flying around, ranging from sexual predator to stalker, that they needed to know more. The Brodesses sent a partial disclosure mentioning the letters to interested buyers and told Coldwell Banker, their realtor, that they intended to show the full letters to anyone whose offer was accepted. Several preliminary bids came in well below the asking price, but the Brodesses weren't ready to take a financial hit and only wanted to share the letters with likely buyers. No one got that far, even after they lowered the price. A Coldwell agent who hadn't read the letters told them in an email that they were being unnecessarily forthcoming. My friend got horrible, threatening letters about her dog barking and she didn't think to disclose it. But the Brodesses insisted. I don't know how you lived through that, through what we did, and think you could do it to somebody else, Derek said. Would you tell somebody about the letters?
Depends on how much money I would make off the property.
I don't, like, see,
it's the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do. I've gone back and forth over that question because I've always said, my family and
But in today's market, definitely tell them.
Like,
because it wouldn't matter.
I've always said my family and, you know, my children will always come first. So if it was their safety, but I also don't want to sound like a total dick and be like, I don't care about other people. But 100% of the time, my family will always come first, you know? Yeah. But I kind of feel what they're doing. Like, if they are serious buyers, maybe disclose the letters to a point. Because they didn't bother any of the other people that lived in the house. You know what I mean? Like, the previous owners, they got one letter before they moved out. And that was it. So,
sounds like a huge prank on them.
It kind of does.
Like a mean prank.
Yeah. A fun, mean prank. Just kidding. Derek and Maria thought about what they would have done had the previous owners told them about the letters from the Watcher. The Woodses were both retired scientists. They told the Brodesses that they remembered the letter they received as more strange than threatening. It thanked them for taking care of the house. They say they never had any issues, and we certainly never felt watched, Andrea told them. They rarely even locked the doors. But the Brodesses felt the name alone was ominous enough to merit mentioning to a new family moving in. And on June 2nd of 2015, a year after buying 657 Boulevard, they filed a legal complaint against the Woodses, arguing that the Woodses should have disclosed the letter, just as they had the fact that water sometimes got in the basement. The Brodesses say they hope to reach a quiet settlement. Their kids didn't know about the watcher, and their lawyer assured them that, at most, a small legal news wire might pick up the story. Okay. I feel like that's a dick move on their part. You know it? Because the Woods' letter was not threatening on them. You know? It was just weird. Wow. It was just a weird thing. And they were probably like, what's a watcher? Like, you know, when they got it. And it was basically thanking them for taking care of the house. Like, you know, that's a freaking, what's that thing I hate so much in neighborhoods that they have?
HOA.
Yes, it's like a homeowners association sending a letter when you're moving. Thank you so much for keeping up with all your, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and then it's the watcher. So they're probably like, oh, that's different, you know, and what's a watcher? And then they just threw it away. Like, I'm so scatterbrained, y'all. I would see that and be like, oh, and forget about it like 5 minutes later, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think it was a huge deal on the Woods' part, especially if they're telling the truth. If they got more letters, then yes, it is. But if it was just that, I don't think that was a huge deal. We do some creepy stories, Tamron Hall said on the Today Show a few weeks later. This might be top 10 creepy. They made it on the Today Show and they didn't want anybody to know. This might be top 10 creepy. A local reporter had found the complaint, which included snippets of the watcher's menacing threats. And after a belated attempt by the Brodesses to seal it, the story went viral. News trucks camped out at 657 Boulevard, and one local reporter set up a lawn chair to conduct his own watch. The Brodesses got more than 300 media requests, but with advice from a crisis management consultant referred by one of Derek's colleagues, they decided not to speak publicly to spare their kids even more attention. They vacated Westfield and went to a friend's beach house. They didn't find much peace. Maria's grandfather had a heart attack, and the friend they were staying with had a grand mal seizure. Eventually, Derek and Maria sat down with their children and explained the real reason they hadn't moved into their new home. The kids had tons of questions. Who is the watcher? Where does this person live? Why is this person angry with us? To which Derek and Maria had very few answers. Can you imagine having that conversation with a 5-year-old? Your town isn't as safe as you think it is, and there's a boogeyman obsessed with you. From a safer distance, the watcher was a real-life mystery to solve. The watcher claimed was in the walls. The home inspector had already looked and told Derek the only issue was the aging home's lack of insulation. So every time he mentioned have they found what's in the walls, there wasn't anything in there. A group of Reddit users obsessed over Google Maps Street View, which showed a car parked in front of 657 that one user thought had a man holding a camera in a driver's seat. The range of proposed suspects included a jilted mistress, a spurned relator, a local high schooler's creative writing project, guerrilla marketing for a horror movie, and mall goths having fun. Some people just thought the Brodesses were wimps for not moving in. I would never let the sicko stop me from moving into a house. Never back down from a terrace. Which irked the Brodesses. None of them have read the letters or had their children threatened by someone they didn't know. To decide whether this person's only nuts enough to write these letters and not do something, but what if something did happen? In Westfield, people were on edge. Lori Clancy, who teaches piano lessons in her house behind 657 Boulevard, told me one of her students came for a lesson shortly after news of the watcher broke and started bawling. She was terrified to walk down the boulevard, Clancy said. At the first Westfield Town Council meeting after the letters became public, The mayor assured the public that the watcher hadn't been heard from in a year, and that even though the police hadn't solved the case, their investigation had been exhaustive. This was news to 657's neighbors, most of whom had never heard from the cops. So the cops never asked all the neighbors. We are confounded as to how a thorough investigation can be conducted without talking to all the neighbors with proximity to the home, several of them wrote in a letter to the local paper. Under the glare of national attention, Baron Chambliss, a veteran detective in the Westville Police, was asked to look at the case. The Brodesses are victims, and I don't think they got the support they needed, Chambliss, who has since retired, said. Chambliss knew his colleagues had looked closely at Michael Langford, and according to his brother Sandy Langford, Michael had been diagnosed with schizophrenia as a young man. He sometimes spooked newcomers to the neighborhood when he did strange things, like walk through their backyard or peek into the windows of their homes that were being renovated. But those who knew him told me that the odd things he did were mostly just unusual neighborly kindnesses. He goes out and gets the newspapers for me every morning, said John Schmidt, who lives next door. People who had known Michael for decades told me they didn't think he was capable of writing those letters. As Chambliss looked into the case, listen to this.
Okay.
He discovered something surprising. Investigators had eventually conducted a DNA analysis on one of the envelopes and determined, where you lick the envelope,
mm-hmm.
that the DNA belonged to a woman.
What?
Yes, it was a woman. Chambliss decided to look more closely at Abby Langford, Michael's sister, who worked as a real estate agent. Was she upset about missing a commission right next door? She also worked at the local Lord and Taylor, and Chambliss coordinated with a security guard there to nab her plastic water bottle during a shift. But Chambliss says the DNA sample was not a match. It was not his sister. Not long after, the prosecutor's office gave Derek and Maria some unexpected news. They wouldn't say why or how, but the Langfords were no longer suspects.
Really?
And they've never disclosed how they found out. The Brodesses were stunned. They told prosecutors that they planned to file civil charges against the Langfords and wondered if the prosecutors were lying to prevent the story from blowing up again. My family moved to the Boulevard in 1961, and we never caused a problem from anybody, Sandy Langford told me. This guy gets all these letters, and all of a sudden, people are pointing fingers. Left without a suspect, the Brodesses reopened their personal investigation. They were still coy about sharing too much with their neighbors, who remained in the pool of suspects, but spent an afternoon walking the block with a picture of the watcher's handwritten envelope. They hoped someone might recognize the writing from a Christmas card. But the only notable encounter came when an older man who lived behind 657 said his son joked that the watcher sounded a little bit like him.
Really?
Uh-huh. A neighbor across the street was a CEO of Kroll, the security firm, and the Brodesses hired the company to look for handwriting matches, but they found nothing. They also hired Robert Leonard, a renowned forensic linguist and former member of the band who didn't find any noteworthy overlap when he scoured the local online forums for similarities to the Watcher's writing. Although, he did think the author might watch Game of Thrones. Jon Snow is one of the Watchers on the wall. And at one point, Derek persuaded a friend in tech to connect him to a hacker willing to try breaking into Wi-Fi networks in the neighborhood to look for incriminating documents. But doing so turned out to be both illegal and more difficult than the movies made it seem, so they didn't go through with it.
Yeah, it's all illegal.
Which, that's kind of low down, I think. You know?
Yeah.
You need a warrant for that there. Chambliss and the Westfield police were also back at square one. The cops asked Andrea Woods for a DNA sample and interviewed her 21-year-old son, who was surprised to find he suddenly seemed to be a suspect. A year after the fact, it was hard to find fresh leads. The initial police canvas had been so porous that it had missed a significant clue. Around the same time that the Brodesses had received their first letter, another family on the boulevard got a similar note from the Watcher, and they're just now finding this out. Seriously. The parents of that family had lived in their house for years, and their kids were grown, so they threw the letter away just as the Woods had. But after the news broke, one of their children posted about it on Facebook and then deleted the post. When investigators spoke to the family, they confirmed that the letter had been similar to the Brodesses, but its existence only made the case more confusing. There wasn't a whole lot to go on, Chambliss told me. One night, Chambliss and a partner were sitting in the back of a van parked on the boulevard watching the house through a pair of binoculars. Around 11 p.m., a car stopped in front of the house long enough for Chambliss to grow suspicious. He says he traced the car to a young woman in a nearby town whose boyfriend lived on the same block as 657. The woman told Chambliss her boyfriend was into some seriously dark video games, including one in which he was playing a specific character. Can you guess what the character's name was?
Jon Snow.
It was the Watcher. Oh. As for the female DNA, Chambliss figured the girlfriend or someone else could have helped. The boyfriend was living elsewhere at the time, but Chambliss says he agreed to come in for an interview on two separate occasions. He didn't show up for either one. Chambliss didn't have enough evidence to compel him to appear with the media attention dying down. He dropped the case and moved on. While the Brodesses continued to be consumed by stress and fear for the rest of Westfield, the story became a little more than a creepy urban legend. A house to walk by on Halloween if you were brave enough. No one who had lived in the house before the Woods would recall anything unusual, and it was hard for people to imagine their idyllic neighborhood could be host to something so sinister. A woman who lives nearby said that after the news broke, she and 10 or so of her neighbors had gathered in the street to puzzle out who might have sent the letters. Eventually, she said, they came to a consensus. Maybe the Brodesses sent the letters to themselves.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. The theory, as it went, was that the Brodesses suffered buyer's remorse or realized they couldn't afford the home and concocted an elaborate scheme to get out of the sale. Or Derek was cooking up some kind of insurance fraud, or they were angling for a movie deal, which the Brodesses received several movie offers and they turned them down. And Lifetime eventually released a movie called The Watcher, but the Brodesses sent a cease and desist letter arguing that the couple and its movie was biracial and the letters were signed The Raven. So there's that. I guess Netflix eventually got it because it's on Netflix now. Some locals found it noteworthy that over the course of a decade, the Brodesses had upgraded from a $315,000 house to a $770,000 house to a $1.3 million house. That I seriously wanted to say that like Dr. Evil. $1.3 million. Sorry, I've been using that gif a lot when I send text to you and Ashlyn. Let's see, a few weeks after the letters became public, the Westfield Leader published an article in which anonymous neighbors were quoted asking why the Brodesses kept renovating a home they weren't moving into, or questioning whether they had really done that much renovating at all. The Leader even cast doubt on Maria's commitment to her family's safety, citing as evidence the fact that she had a public Facebook page with photos of her children. The paper did note that the police had tested Maria's DNA and it didn't match. I think that's kind of low down for them to attack her Facebook page, which...
Yeah, it's just...
I kind of feel like if something like that was going on, though, I would make it private and not post pictures of my kids. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, or even get rid of it altogether. But, you know, everybody's different, and I just feel like they probably should have left Maria alone. None of the theories made sense. The Brodesses had answers to every question. How does someone go from a $300,000 house to $1.3 million in 10 years, Derek told me. It's America. They weren't speaking publicly, and the rumors persisted. One Boulevard resident wrote a letter to the editor arguing that an elaborate scheme is underway to defraud the Woods family for $1 million. Chambliss told me some Westfield cops even bought into the theory. There are more skeptics online. I live in a neighboring town. If these letters have been happening for a while, there is no doubt in my mind that it would have been made public way before this, Lord Fluffernutter said on Reddit.
Fluffernutter?
Lord Fluffernutter on Reddit.
You know what a fluffer is?
What?
Remember Nip Tuck?
What?
What a fluffer is?
We watched Nip Tuck like forever ago. What's a fluffer?
The basic porn star that keeps the guys hard in between scenes.
So that's what Lord Fluffernutter does? Oh my god. That's his Reddit name, or their wow. Reddit name. There's a smut and supernatural smut, y'all. Anyway, I'm just telling you who said it. The Brodesses hadn't known how their neighbors would react to news about the Watcher, but they lived in the area for a decade, and Maria's family had been part of the community for much longer. So it was shocking to find themselves being accused as con artists. To Derek, it seemed that some in Westfield preferred the conspiracy theory to considering whether their town might be home to a menace. There's a natural tendency to say, I've lived here for 35 years, nothing's happened to me, Derek said. Don't show me that. What happened to my family is an affront to their contention that they're safe, that there's no such thing as mental illness in their community. People don't want to believe this could happen in Westfield. Maria looks back fondly on her childhood. She was born a few years after Westfield resident John Liss infamously murdered his wife, mother, and three children in their home, and remembers a period when she and other kids were warned to look out for a strange van driving around town. My mother always told me, don't have a false sense of security, she said. It wasn't that bad things were going on all the time, it was that bad things happened everywhere. She didn't want me to think that this is Mayberry. Let's see. The Brodesses were suddenly outcast, not only from their home, but also from their town. Derek wanted to leave Westfield, but Maria insisted on not uprooting the kids. This person took so much from us. I wouldn't let them take more. 2 years after the Watcher's letters arrived, the Brodesses borrowed money from family members to buy a second home in Westfield, using an LLC to keep the location private. But staying in town was stressful. The first time Maria let her daughter go to school with friends, she stared at the tracker on her daughter's iPhone the whole time. One of their kids was in language arts when the class teacher led a debate about whether the family in a book they were reading should move to Westfield. The class thought they should, in part, because of how safe it was. Afterward, one of the kids told the Brodesses' child, my parents told me that no matter what your family says, Westfield is safe. Kids are mean as hell. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Brodesses still had to figure out what to do with their house. The lawsuit was pending, but seemed unlikely to succeed. Some states require sellers to disclose transient social conditions, like murders or possible hauntings. In a 1991 case involving an allegedly ghost-filled house, a New York court ruled that, as a matter of law, the house is haunted, but New Jersey had no such regulation. In the spring of 2016, they put 657 back on the market, hoping it might garner more interest given how many people had reacted to the letters by saying they would have ignored them and just moved in. The Brodesses held a well-attended open house, after which Derek and Maria spent hours researching every person who signed in and comparing their handwriting to the Watchers. But each time a potential buyer expressed interest and met with the Brodesses' lawyer to read the letters, they backed out. Some cocky guy from Staten Island said, fuck it, I'm going to get a house at a discount, Derek recalled. He read the letters, and we never heard from him again. Feelings of it as if they were out of options, the Brodus's real estate lawyer proposed an idea. Sell the house to a developer who could tear it down and split the property into two sellable homes. Which this is going to totally piss off the watcher. Did you hear what they're going to do?
Mm-hmm.
They thought they could get $1 million for the lot. Submissions like this have become common in Westfield, much to the chagrin of many locals, and 657 was one of the neighborhood's largest lots. Even so, dividing it would require the Westfield Planning Board to grant an exception. The two smaller lots would be 67.4 and 67.6 feet wide, just shy of the mandated 70 feet. When the proposal was publicly announced, Westfield's Facebook groups lit up. Many people expressed sympathy for the Brodus's, while others pointed out real estate is always a gamble. Another faction was convinced this was the culmination of a long con. Out of this whole scam artist story, there ends up being nothing more disturbing than this move, a local woman said. A man who coached the Brodus's son in football wrote, they were in over their head from day one. The application was jarring for the neighbors who had learned about the watcher from a lawsuit and always found it strange that the Brodus's didn't share more information, not seeming to understand they were following orders from the police and trying to protect their kids. A typical Facebook conversation went like this. Sounds like this whole watcher thing was a ploy. The owners are good people, not a ploy. Okay, I know nothing about them. When the planning board met to decide the application on January 2017, it had already devoted a three-hour hearing to the issue. More than 100 residents showed up. One of them, who lived across the street and had a daughter in the same grade as one of the Brodus's kids, had retained a lawyer to fight the proposal. Here was a new suspect who put the watcher would go as far as to hire an attorney to preserve the house. After a quick discussion about a Wells Fargo branch that wanted to use brighter light bulbs than the town allowed, the room grew as tense as suburban planning board meeting. James Forrest, the Brodus's attorney, explained the 3-foot exemption was as narrow as the easel he was using to display a map of the neighborhood. A map that showed several lots on the block that were also too small. The neighbors expressed concern that the plan might require knocking down trees and that the new homes would have aesthetically unpleasing front-facing garages. Forrest repeating, threatened the halfway house as a possible alternative. After the lawyers, a parade of neighbors stood to speak. A woman whose kids had been to the Brodus's old home for a birthday party spoke on behalf of 9 neighbors and presented 657 Boulevard as Westfield's Alamo. Our neighborhoods are constantly under attack from turf lots, parking decks, you name it, she said. If we can't make a stand on Boulevard, where can we? At one point, Abby Langford stood up to say she had spent almost 60 years looking at that magnificent, beautiful house and didn't want to be looking out at a driveway. The hearing lasted 4 hours, during which there was a little discussion of the reason the Brodus's had been driven to tear down the dream home. Has anybody thought about whether or not this lunatic who did this has been apprehended, says Tom Higgins, who lived across the street. Even so, Higgins pointed out that there was no guarantee the watcher wouldn't send letters to the two new houses and argued that aesthetics should rule the day. Putting up two houses there is going to stick out like an old client of mine in Texas told me. It's going to stick out like a dog's balls. Is that a thing that people say? Do you say that?
Not normally.
I mean, we do now. While some of the neighbors expressed compassion, their focus remained on what the Brodus's stood to gain financially and what they themselves might lose. At 11:30, the board unanimously rejected the proposal. A New Jersey judge later denied the Brodus's appeal of the decision. Derek and Maria were distraught. Even if the plan had gone through, it would have only staunched their financial bleeding. On top of the mortgage and renovations, they had paid around $100,000 in Westfield property taxes. The town denied their request for relief. Let's see. Maria said, "This is my town. I grew up here. I came back. I chose to raise my kids here. And you know that we've been through. You had the ability 2.5 years into a nightmare to make it a little better. And you've decided that this house is more important than we are." That's really how it felt. On top of all that, her dad had recently died unexpected. Father Michael Saparita, the priest who blessed the house, went to one of the planning board meetings and told me he was taken aback by how many people had come up to him and said they thought the whole thing was a hoax. I think the human element of the story was kind of a lost on the neighbors, Saparita said. The watcher had expressed a desire to protect the boulevard from change, but instead it had been torn apart. Let's see. 2 weeks later, Derek went to 657 to deal with squirrels that had taken up residence in the roof. They finally got somebody to rent the house. So when Derek got there, the renter handed him an envelope that just arrived. Violent winds and bitter cold to the vile and spiteful Derek and his wench of a wife, Maria. This letter, 2.5 years after the watcher appeared, came out of nowhere. It was dated February 13th, the day the Brodesses gave depositions in their lawsuit against the Woodses. "You wonder who the watcher is? Turn around, you idiots," the letter read. "Maybe you even spoke to me, one of the so-called neighbors who has no idea who the watcher could be. Or maybe you do know and you're too scared to tell anyone. Good move." The letter was less stylish and more wrathful than the others, and it seemed the writer had been closely following the story. They had seen the media coverage. "I walked by the news trucks when they took over my neighborhood and mocked me." Derek's surreptitious investigatory efforts. "I watched as you watched from the dark house in an attempt to find me. Telescopes and binoculars are wonderful inventions. And the attempt to tear down the house, 657 Boulevard survived your attempted assault and stood strong with its army of supporters barricading its gates." The letter read, "My soldiers of the Boulevard followed my orders to a T. They carried out their mission and saved the soul of 657 Boulevard with my orders. All hail the Watcher." The renter was mentioned. He was spooked, but agreed to stay if the Brodesses installed cameras around the house. And the letter indicated revenge could come.
Didn't already have cameras?
Yeah.
Weird.
Maybe he wanted more. Revenge could come in many forms. Maybe a car accident. Maybe a fire. Maybe something as simple as a mild illness that never seems to go away but makes you feel sick day after day after day after day after day. Maybe the mysterious death of a pet. Loved ones suddenly die. Planes and cars and bicycles crash. Bones break. "It was like we were back at the beginning," said Maria. "But it also meant fresh evidence that might help invigorate the investigation." Derek took the letter to the police headquarters, where a detective looked at the neighborhood map and traced a circle around the house, 300 yards in diameter, suggesting the watcher must be somewhere in there. Derek drew one much closer. "In my view, it's one of the 10 houses in the world," he said. The Brodesses continued to press the case, but there still wasn't much for law enforcement to go on. It was possible to look up and see down the street to see the watcher and practically anyone. Residents mentioned to me a teenager whose father had grown up around the corner and a man who sometimes walked around the neighborhood playing a flute. An elderly couple behind the house had been there 47 years. Do you remember that neighbor we used to have? And y'all, it would be like 12 o'clock at night, and he had like a lamppost by his mailbox, and he'd come out and sit under his lamppost and play the guitar in his driveway. Oh, yeah. Do you remember that? But these were bits of information that could mean everything or nothing depending on how hard you looked at them. The Brodesses sent new names to the investigators whenever they found something odd, but their greatest fear was that the watcher could be someone they'd never suspect. One day last spring, Derek picked me up at the Westfield train station. We drove past 657 Boulevard, which he and Maria try to avoid unless they have to pick up the tax bill. It's all beautiful trees and beautiful houses, but all I feel is anxious, Derek said. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night thinking, what would my life be like if this didn't happen? We lost Christmas a couple times, and you don't get that back, Christmas with a five-year-old. The Brodesses no longer live in ever-present fear that the Watcher might strike at any moment. They continue to deal with lingering effects from the letters, and they have a new tenant at 657. But the rent doesn't cover the mortgage. Their kids are occasionally teased at school, and the conspiratorial rumors persist. They try to avoid the people who spoke out against their planning board application or accuse them of being con artists, but suburban life makes that impossible. I see these people on the soccer field at the train station, and my heart starts going like it did when I played hockey and was about to get in a fight, Derek said. When Maria found herself in a spin class at the YMCA with the head of the planning board, she went up afterward and told him, "You continue to hurt my family every day." Earlier this year, the planning board approved splitting a lot around the corner that required an even larger exception than the Brodesses. Wow. I would be so pissed. Most people in Westfield don't really think about the Watcher anymore. The real estate market's doing fine, and many were surprised to find out the Brodesses were still dealing with the problem. Let's see here. The Watcher was also no longer the only person sending anonymous letters in Westfield. Last Christmas Eve, several families received an envelope in their mailboxes. They'd been delivered by hand to the homes of people who had been the most vocal in criticizing the Brodesses online. One of them, who lived a few blocks down on Boulevard, had written on Facebook, "I wish we could go back to the days of tar and feathers. I have just the couple in mind." The top letters were signed, "Friends of the Brodess Family." The letter writer had clearly been infected not only with the Watcher's penchant for anonymous notes, but also a simmering resentment, one that had snaked its way through Westfield, making enemies of the neighbors. The people who received the letters didn't know who sent them, but the tone had a familiar ring to me. When I asked Derek Brodess whether he had written them, he paused for a moment and said he had. He wasn't proud of it. He hadn't even told his wife, and said that they were the only anonymous letters he'd written, but he had felt driven to do this because he was at his wit's end and fed up with watching silently as people threw accusations at his family based on practically nothing. One of the people who received the letter told me they had never met the Brodesses and had no interest in doing so. The Watcher had been obsessed with 657 Boulevard, and Derek, in turn, had become obsessed with the Watcher and everything the letters had set in motion. "It's like cancer," he told me. "We think about it every day." Sitting at the Westfield train station, Derek handed me his phone so I could read the fourth letter. "You were despised by the house," it read, "and the Watcher won." And that's the story.
That's crazy.
Could you imagine?
No.
God. Okay, you guys. Thank you for sticking around. This has been a super long episode. We're almost at an hour and a half. I did not think it would go this long. But I hope you got some chills, and I hope it made you think, because this case is still unsolved, and I truly want to know who the Watcher is. What about you?
At this point, yes, I want to know, just to be able to, like, find out how he has that much time on his hands.
Well, it has to be somebody retired or something like that, you know? Because I would, like, my ADD would kick in, and I'd forget about it within like a week or something and go on with something new, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to do it, so.
Yeah, it was definitely dedicated.
Yes. All right, you guys. I hope you have a fantastic week. Start to layer up because it's getting cold. Stay hydrated, and we will see you guys next Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.